Welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by Upstate Medical University and University Hospital. Linda Cohen here with you. Well, a recent study from the National Cancer Institute's cancer registries found that the incidence of liver cancer in the United States tripled between 1975 and 2005. And in 2011, there were over 26,000 new cases reported in this country, with almost 20,000 deaths attributed to the disease. But with these troublesome findings comes the good news, that survival rates have also increased, due in part to the fact that more patients are being diagnosed at earlier stages when treatment is more effective. Well, joining us this morning to explore the current state of treatment and the outlook for cancer of the liver and the bile ducts is Dr. Dilip Kathur, Chief of Hepatobiliary and Pancreatic Surgery at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Kathur. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So let's start out by talking about some of the causes for liver cancer and cancer of the bile duct. What causes this disease?
Well, the liver cancer, if you just take liver cancer by itself, is either primary liver cancer or secondary liver cancer. And the causes for those two are quite separate. Mm-hmm. So if we talk about the primary liver cancer, which is one of the used to be a fatal disease in the past, but, you know, fortunately we have good treatments for it. A lot of it is caused in people who have cirrhosis. So that's sort of the underlying pathology there.
What exactly is cirrhosis?
Cirrhosis is where the liver gets scarred down. A lot of fibrous tissue takes place in the liver.
So it can't function normally.
It doesn't, exactly. And in addition to that, there are instances where if you don't have cirrhosis, but if you have things like hepatitis, either hepatitis B or hepatitis C, either of those can predispose people to cancer. They don't exactly cause cancer, but they predispose people to having primary liver cancer. The secondary liver cancer, of course, comes from a cancer somewhere else in the body, and one of the most common places is colon or rectal cancers. And so colorectal metastases going into the livers is probably the next most common liver cancer, and it is clearly the highest incidence of secondary liver cancer. And then you can get secondary liver cancer from other places like pancreas, breast, kidneys. A lot of other organs can metastasize to the liver.
So in that case, it's kind of the victim of cancer starting somewhere else. And but in the first case with cirrhosis, let me ask you a bit more about that. Is that large? I mean, I think the common law, is that, or the common lore is that cirrhosis is often caused by alcoholism. Is that, would you say, the majority of what causes?
Alcohol is probably a fairly substantial
contributor,
but if you look at the causes of cirrhosis, alcohol would probably be only about one-third or so. The rest of it is hepatitis B, hepatitis C. There are certain instances where we don't even know what the cause is. It's called cryptogenic, meaning unknown cause. And that happens quite a lot, especially in women who have what's called as a primary biliary cirrhosis. We don't know the cause. We think it is autoimmune. But alcohol is not to be blamed, I think, for cirrhosis a lot of times.
Who would be most at risk? You mentioned women in this case. Is it age-related? I mean, do you generally see the population who might get either primary or secondary over a certain age?
Most of it is probably in the 50 to 70 age range. Cirrhosis usually sets in, unless somebody's got a very early cirrhosis. The cirrhosis usually sets in somewhere around 40-ish age group. And that's about the time when the liver starts becoming more vulnerable for cancer.
How does somebody know? What are some of the symptoms or signs that people might be aware of when this disease is either primary or secondary is ongoing?
See, that's one of the problems with liver cancer is there you know, a lot of times liver cancer will be there without any symptoms at all.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen patients that have tumors that are the size of even a grapefruit, without having any symptoms.
Mm.
So, you know, that is one of the problems with liver cancer. But if people have symptoms, then they're usually they're related to pain in the right side of the abdomen, right upper part of the abdomen, that's where the liver is located. Very occasionally, people will present with jaundice itself, but jaundice can be due to a lot of other reasons.
And sometimes their eyes will look a little yellow.
Yellow, mm-hmm. Yeah. And occasionally, you can get pain in the shoulder because the liver sits right under the diaphragm. And if the diaphragm gets irritated, then the right side, the right shoulder, can get referred pain.
That's very interesting. So how do you make a diagnosis of liver cancer?
Most of the times the diagnosis, you know, it's really, a lot of it is, you know, you have to sort of be vigilant about it. In people that have cirrhosis or that are susceptible for liver cancer, like, for example, hepatitis C or hepatitis B, they frequently should get blood tests, what are called as tumor markers, as alpha-fetoprotein is one of the tumor marker. A lot of times, if they have cirrhosis, people will get ultrasounds on a frequent basis, once a year or something like that. For secondary cancers, there's a good surveillance mechanism, especially for colorectal cancer. There's a blood test called CEA, which will pick up if there's a metastasis going on. And once there's a suspicion, then the diagnosis is usually done by CAT scans.
So they do radiology study of some kind.
Yeah.
MRI as well
MRI,
sometimes.
CAT scan, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So does the treatment choice, is the treatment choice dependent in some way, obviously must be influenced as to whether it's primary disease or secondary?
Correct, yes.
So
absolutely.
How does it vary?
Well, you know, the primary liver cancer most of the times does not respond to chemotherapy. And so for the primary liver cancer, some kind of removal or transplantation are the two sort of major modalities. For the secondary, also surgery is probably the best modality, but a lot of times we would start off with chemotherapy because chemotherapy seems to work. And we kind of want to see what the response is from chemotherapy for the secondary cancers before we proceed to surgery. So there's a bit of a difference in the two cancers in how you approach them. So in other words, the primary cancer is more, with the approach is a lot more surgically oriented.
More direct almost.
Yeah, while as with the secondary cancers, it's more chemotherapy based.
That's interesting. Are the different cell types? I mean, in other words, if you're talking about primary liver cancer, it's a different cell type than obviously if it's a metastasis.
Absolutely, yeah. So the primary are the ones that actually originate from the liver cells itself.
Right.
So the liver cells go awry, while as the secondary ones, when you take a biopsy, you'll frequently find the same cell type that came from, for example, colon.
So it's like invading cells.
It's invading cells, yeah.
So, in your experience as a surgeon, how have the techniques changed, or have the techniques changed in any way, again, based on whether it's primary or secondary?
Well, I think there's a lot of new techniques nowadays. And in addition to that, the whole concept of giving these people a multidisciplinary treatment has really made a big difference in the survival rates. So, in other words, for example, if we take a secondary patient with a secondary liver cancer, a multidisciplinary approach would be an oncologist saying, okay, we're going to give these many cycles of chemotherapy. Following that, if there's regression, then the surgeon's going in and taking part of it out. If there's no regression, maybe doing radiofrequency ablation. So there are a lot of different techniques.
Tell me a bit more. So radiofrequency ablation is more of a radiographic technique, and they basically zap the liver?
Yeah, essentially. I mean, what they would do is they go in with a probe put in radiologically by intervention radiologists, The probe emits radio frequency, which causes the cells to heat up. And once they heat up to a certain level, you just kind of burn them. So it's really sort of burning that tissue.
Can people survive with, obviously, if you're taking parts of their liver, they can survive with a smaller liver. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's really the fascinating part of the liver, is you can survive with as little as 30% of the liver.
Wow.
And the other fascinating part is that 30% will grow to 80 to 90% within just about 6 to 8 weeks. So liver is the only organ in our body that regenerates like that almost completely.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That truly is amazing. Yeah. So there is more hope in a sense if surgery is indicated.
Yeah.
But when you talk about someone who has severe primary disease and requires a transplant, how are those going? Are those successful as well?
Yeah. Yeah. If, you know, the transplants have to be done in people who are selective for certain parameters of. So, for example, if somebody has a very large cancer, they're usually not considered transplant candidates. But if you select patients correctly, transplant gives a survival of about 70-75% over a 5-year period, which is excellent.
That is excellent, given the fact that you said at one point it was kind of a death sentence.
And yeah, absolutely.
That's really, really amazing. And with the radio frequency ablation, I read somewhere they're also looking at some other radioactive isotopes to be used. Is that something also that's coming down the pike? Or
yeah, those. That's when we have people who are not good operative candidates, there are two modalities that can be used. One is to ablate them by radio frequency ablation. The other one, which is becoming also quite popular now and effective, is to stop the blood supply by embolizing the feeding blood vessels that go to the tumor. And the latest thing in that embolization is to use, it's called yttrium beads, which are radioactive beads. So you inject the radioactive beads into the feeding blood vessels, they go to the tumor, they are localized within that tumor, and they emit the radio waves and kill the tumor.
So it's very targeted.
Very targeted.
Starve the. And there was also something I read about an oral medicine. Is that Nexavar? Does that do the same kind of thing? It starves the tumor?
No, Nexavar is more like a chemotherapy.
I see.
Yeah, so far we did not really have any effective chemotherapy for primary liver cancer. Nexavar has shown some promise in that respect. It's not still, we're still trying to find out its place in the whole armamentarium of, you know, where to use it. But certainly at least we have something now where before there was really not much chemotherapy.
It offers some hope. So obviously prevention is critical in terms of hepatitis. You want to make sure that you are inoculated or tested against it. And obviously you want to avoid excessive drinking. So those things are, very apparent and obvious. But it sounds like your program has grown tremendously too since 2005. You were at one point seeing 10 patients annually. Now you see over 100 a year, which is quite amazing. So you're helping a lot of people in the Central New York region. And once again, we thank you so much for coming in and sharing all this very up-to-date information with us. I hope we'll hear some more wonderful breakthroughs. My guest has been Dr. Dilip Kator, Chief of Hepatobiliary and Pancreatic Surgery at Upstate Medical University. And we have to take another short break. We'll be right back. I hope you'll stay right with us. I'm Linda Cohen. This is HealthLink on Air, FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR.